Welcome to On Par with Maury Povich.
Welcome back, everybody, to On Par with me, Maury Povich. Now, today's guest, he's just not a cultural force. He's somebody I've had the privilege of watching grow into one of the most important voices in television. Now, when I stepped away 3 years ago from my talk show, Karamo Brown was stepping into the arena with his own talk show. And over the past few years, he is now celebrating his fourth season with his talk show. And I've been cheering him on from the sidelines, watching with pride. He has built a show rooted in compassion and honesty and connection. From making history as the first openly gay African-American man on reality TV, to becoming the heart of Queer Eye, to now running his own successful talk show, Karamo has carried the torch forward in powerful ways. I couldn't be prouder of him, and I'm so happy he's here today. Nice to see you, my friend.
I'm never like this. No one, I don't know why I just got emotional.
What are you doing?
I never get emotional. I literally make other people cry.
Oh, no, come on.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know what that is, Maury. I don't know what that is. I do know what it is. It's because I respect you so much. And, like, to hear you introduce me like that just got me.
Well, you've done so great. And let me tell you the
statistic. I never do this, by the way.
I love it. Yeah. I feel like Barbara Walters.
Exactly,
I got my guest crying. This is terrific. The reason why I'm so proud of you, I'll give you the statistics, okay? I was on the air 31 years doing daytime talk.
Yeah.
In that time frame, 75 talk shows went into the graveyard.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't make it.
Yeah.
They couldn't make it past the first or second year. I mean, some of them just died halfway through the first year. And so for you to be in your fourth year, I'm telling you, this is big stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Wow. Well, I mean, a lot of it is you know, some of the things you told me when I first was testing on your stage. You were like, be authentic. You told me, listen, be surprised, be engaged, be in the moment. And you told me to have a lot of fun. And I take all of your words and really apply them. And like, you know, the audience is rocking with me and we're going on. So I appreciate it.
Well, the one thing you did and what I told you was, when you read the result of DNA or lie detectors and all that, you don't want to know the result. You want to be just like the audience, the guests, and so therefore you didn't want to know things they didn't.
By the way, I hate you for giving me that advice. Well, and I hate you for me sticking with it.
Because you wanted to know?
I'm nosy as hell. And every time I get an envelope in my hand, I'm like, I need to know what's in here. But I'm like, okay, Maury said don't look. But it's like, sometimes I'm like, I want to know ahead of time.
That adds to your authenticity.
You're right. It does. 100%.
And that's to me, when it comes to talk, particularly daytime talk, you're so right on about authenticity.
Yeah.
You just have to be that way. Now, Queer Eye.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yes.
It's the last year of Queer Eye. How do you feel about that after 10 years?
I feel so happy.
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 Why?
You know, it was monumental, and it changed me as a host, as a man, as a father. It opened up so many dreams that I had of becoming an author. It led me to being able to get my own daytime talk show. But I'm ready for what's next. And this is what's next. And I'm ready to just do this full time, 100% of the time. Right. You know, I spend, for the past 3 years, I've been spending 6 months out of the year doing Queer Eye and then trying to jump into this. And that's a lot of emotions to deal with. And I just want to just be right here, steady. And if I can be also a little transparent, for 3 years, I had a bit of an identity crisis because I had so many people telling me, Queer Eye is one way, so you got to act this way. And then I would come over here on my daytime talk show and they would say, you got to act this way. And I was like, I'm act the same wherever I go.
Exactly.
But you know, now they get to shut up over there and I get to just be me here because I love this. My dream since I was 9 years old was for a daytime talk show, you know? And so I'm never going to mess this up and I'm never going to not be thankful for this opportunity and be sitting in this seat.
It's interesting though. You got a little miffed.
Yeah.
When they announced the ending of the show because your colleague, Bobby Burke.
Yeah.
all of a sudden the same day or the next day announces he's doing a new show on HDTV. And you got a little...
No, I didn't get miffed at him.
Oh, no, come on now.
I'll tell you the truth. He and I are actually best friends. So we talk every single day. And when this happened, I said to him, I was like, oh, girl, you're shady. You're shady, girl. And so, but it was in fun jest. And then he said the fun jest. And then, you know, reporters are the real shady people. And they took it and ran with it and turned to something. I'm so happy for that man, all his success. I'm his biggest fan. And I root for him every single day.
But wait a minute. You didn't like the fact that he announced it the day of or after.
No, I think it's great. Announce when you want. I just said, I was like, oh, you be a little shady, girl.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah. So when you started the talk show,
yeah,
what do you think was the hardest thing to do?
I think the hardest thing for me to do was to get the voices out of my head who were telling me who I was and what I was. And if I, you know.
You mean people were talking to you or your own voice?
Yeah, I don't know. It was the people outside. Because if I can be honest with you, I kind of just said it about like queer eye ending and this. You know, most people compared me to you. And, you know, when you're coming into something.
You deserve better than that.
No. I loved it now. I love it. But in the moment, the comparison was taking away my happiness. And I always try to teach people, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. And as everyone told me, like, you're Maury. And I was like, no, I'm me. We have similarities. We have, you know, I do DNA tests. I'm so honored to be on his stage. I'm so honored to be all these things. But I'm me. And so for a long time, I hated it that people kept saying, you're Maury. It was like, they even called me Maurice.
Oh,
and
really?
So, yeah, and I was like, my name's Karamo, but you know what I mean? But then a switch flipped. And I was sitting in my room, and my best friend Trey, we were talking, and I was like, Maury is the greatest. And I was like, I just love this man. He taught me so much. And Trey was like, why don't you start saying that? Instead of like, you're upset about the comparison.
Right.
And I was like, you're right. I am being compared to the greatest, and I do call you the greatest. You have outdone Oprah. You have outdone. Well, no, you have to get your flowers. You are the greatest. What you have accomplished from beginning to end. I'm sitting next to Michael Jordan of talk.
Whoa.
It's the truth.
I've sat next to Michael Jordan. Trust me. I'm no Michael Jordan.
You are to me. You are to me. Okay. You are Tiger Woods to me. You are Michael Jordan to me.
Thanks.
You are the greatest. And it clicked on me that if people want to compare me to the greatest, I'm going to be thankful every single day. And now, when someone says, you're like Maury, I say, you damn right. I pray that I can be as good as
you. Buy into it, sure.
I pray I can be as good as you. I pray that I can have a career that you had. I pray that I can have people who respect me and love me around the world. I pray that I can do everything you did.
Well,
because you're awesome. Well, I just want to give you your flowers and tell you how much I love you.
You're entitled because Parade Magazine named you a change maker of the year in this year.
Yeah.
And so... I mean, that's pretty good.
Appreciate it. You know,
change maker.
I'm trying to change a little thing or two. You know, we're trying, you know.
Okay. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Personally, you're having a big change in your life.
Me?
You and your significant other broke up.
Oh, yeah. You got some friends? Listen, I'll take an older
really?
Man. Listen, you got an older man. Like, listen.
Connie's the best matchmaker in the world.
Tell Connie I will go from age 40 to 80. Okay? Listen, I'm down if she got any friends.
So, why?
I play golf.
Why are you smiling? Why are you smiling about this?
Let me tell you something. Just like
it was 4 years.
It was 4 years.
You all were together 4 years.
Yes, and we broke up and we're still friends. But let me tell you something. What I try to teach my guests is when you know that you are no longer growing in a relationship, it's time to go.
How do you know that?
Are you smiling the same? Are they pushing you? Are they encouraging for you to go to a next level? Are you laughing the same? Do your friends and family enjoy how you are when you're around them? And I started to look at these things of my own personal self and also like what the people I trust were looking at. And I was like, oh, we're not growing anymore. We hit a plateau where we're friends, but there's nothing more. And
how long into the 4 years did you know that?
Year three. And the last year I said, I'm going to see if we can make the choices to grow together. And because I'm believe like, let's call a spade a spade. Let's talk about it. And I said, we're not growing anymore. Can we do this, this, and this to get on the same page? And we tried for a little bit, but then we realized it wasn't working. And so at that point, instead of getting mad and arguing and start doing stuff that was going to cause us not to be friends, I said, so let's start talking about how we can grow apart. And I do this in relationships all the time. I tell people, let's grow apart.
Well, as I remember, I think I read the previous relationship was like 10 years.
10 years, yeah. We weren't growing. You know what I mean? Like, once, you know, we stop motivating, we, you know, like, the intimacy starts to go. That's when you have to, I don't know why we think that relationships, we have to stay in them if they're unhealthy. And I'm not saying give up, because I believe that you should put in the work. But both people have to equally put in the work. And when they're not doing that, instead of holding on to something that's not keeping you motivated and growing, you got to get out of there. And so 10 years for, listen, the only person I'm worried about is the 44 years I've been.
Do you feel free?
I feel free. I feel free. I feel happy. And the growth that I wasn't getting there, I'm getting on my own. And that's what it's all about. We came into this world
by ourselves.
How do
you do that? How do you do it on your own?
Well, you know, it's a lot of self-reflection. So I look at myself in the mirror and I say, where do you need to be better? And why did you stop being better when you're in this relationship? And for me, I'm a big writer. I write out the areas where I need to grow and I map it out.
So what areas?
So I need to grow emotionally. I realized that I was helping others, but when it came to me, I wasn't paying attention to the things that were hurting me. The areas that I need to heal. I also realized that I stopped dreaming because I was so focused on their dreams. And I'm a giver by nature. And this is how I was as a father. It was all about my kids. And I was like, I cannot give up dreaming. I have to dream until I'm dead. I got to dream. There's as long as we're alive, there's always something more where we can grow. And so I started dreaming again. I started checking my emotions and making sure I was healthy. And now I'm happy and got new stuff happening. I'm sitting on a podcast with Maury Povich. Come on, listen, you break up and have your breakthrough, and that's what
I'm
doing.
Why am I old school or what? I don't have this self-reflection.
Yeah?
I don't. I don't know why. I guess maybe, in this business, oh boy, in this business, for years, it was always about trying to make it in this business. How do I make it in this business? Yeah. And then you get hired and then you get fired and there's an up and there's a down and all this kind of stuff. And I think that what the talk show did for me, it kind of gave me confidence that, I've made it in this business. Yeah. I've made it. Do you feel like you've made it?
Yeah. Well, before I answer that question, can I say something? I disagree. I think you do self-reflect.
How do I do it?
Because a man with your success in both career and family, I've met your wife. I've seen how happy she is when she talks about you. I've met people who have worked with you for years, and they have nothing but great things to say about you. And only a man who can say, you know what, if I have something, I have to be able to pivot, is the person who self-reflects. I think it comes natural to you to pivot, that therefore you don't realize that you're taking the moment.
Oh, I see.
You do it in the moment.
So in other words, I don't remember when I'm doing it.
Exactly.
But I'm kind of doing it.
You do it consciously.
I do it subconsciously.
You do it subconsciously.
That's possible?
Very possible. And I think, and so I just say that so you can give yourself more credit of like, no, you've been self-reflecting and pivoting and being the best version of yourself for years, which is why men like me, everyone who works here, who works with you, can all enjoy and love you being here because you've always tried to be better so that we all feel great.
That's true.
Yeah.
I always felt, it's very interesting. Years ago, Edward R. Murrow, who was the great newsman during World War II and afterwards, he always said, I'm no more important than if I was talking to the guy at the bar.
Yeah.
And I've always thought of myself as, I'm just one of the crew.
Yeah.
You know, and so therefore, I guess, that's why everybody, most of the people on my staff work with me for 25, 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, being in this business, how many people who don't see themselves that way? They see themselves bigger than everything.
Are you kidding?
You know?
They have what I consider this disease called big shot-itis.
Ooh, I like that. Big shot-itis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They always, you know, I used to, years ago, when I was anchoring newscasts around the country, I would be having a co-anchor who might have been there longer than I have, and he had been established or she had been and somehow they got their chairs higher than mine.
Really?
Doing the news, right? They would just be higher.
Well, did they put something underneath it?
No, they jacked them
jacked
up.
Jacked them up?
And by the way, if you go back and look at the David Letterman show,
yeah,
maybe, I don't think Carson did it, but I know he always sat higher.
Higher,
than the
yes, guests. I do remember. He always sat higher.
Right.
Wow.
I think that's all about the ego.
Yeah, it is. That is. How did you deal with stuff like that? Because I come across people like that now.
I mean, you hate it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there but for the grace of God go I.
yeah. And look at it, you outlasted all those people.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
You know, it's very interesting about that. I'll tell you a story about that. Over the years, I made a list of all the people who screwed me over. You know, managers who fired me, managers I didn't get along with, managers who I didn't understand. And I had this list, this grudge list that, oh boy, somehow I'm going to get revenge on them. Every single one of them at some point were fired.
Yeah.
And instead of going, I felt sorry for them.
Yes.
What does that say?
It's your character. It's who you are. And I think what you just displayed is such the biggest lesson that, especially for people who want your success to learn, is that clapping for or being elated in someone else's pain, even if they've hurt you, doesn't serve you. What serves you is empathy, and what serves you is compassion, and you're a great example of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about happy shit,
yeah.
All right? I didn't know that you appeared in a Taylor Swift video.
I did. Taylor Swift is
the
best.
How did that happen?
She was.
Did you know her?
No, I did not. I know her now, but at the time, she, you know, like, you know how this business is. Her team contacted my team and said, we want, you know, the guys from Queer Eye in the video, and they were like, we know, can you change your schedule? And I'm like, yeah, the biggest pop star in the world calls. You're gonna change your schedule and do whatever the hell you want, and like, it was the best time because, you know, like, you get to be near greatness. You know, like, she's a once-in-a-lifetime artist. And, you know, like, I imagine somebody who was next to the Michaels and, you know, the Diana Rosses and the Shares in their time and got to sit next to them, the Dolly Partons. You get to sit next to somebody who you know has changed the game forever. It's similar to what I'm doing right now. And so it was amazing.
And how was she?
The best person on the face of the earth.
You know, I've heard that.
Nicest? Kind, and I'm an observer. This is my Scorpio trait, is I like to watch people when they don't think I'm watching. And when no one's looking, how do you treat that one person right there that, you know, someone else might say their job is insignificant? No one's job is insignificant, and that's the person I want to see how you're going to treat them. And when I tell you, she spoke to every single person, hugged every person, had a kind word, made sure they were okay, and that has been consistent since every time I've met her and been around her, consistently kind. But I also think that's a big part because she keeps her family around her. She stays grounded. She doesn't have that ism that you talked about. You know what I mean?
So you think she's happy?
I do. And the fact that she's engaged?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, she's had a lot of boyfriends
in her
career.
Yeah.
This is the first engagement.
Yeah. And I think this is the one that's going to stick. I think this is the one
I got the feeling. She was never going to get engaged unless she knew it was
the
for
one.
Real.
Yeah, which is smart. Yeah, she's like, she paid attention. You know, and the funny part is, I mean, like, she actually even had that many. Like, I think about how many people I've dated in my life. It's just that they're not public. You know, like she, what, she have like 7 boyfriends? And all of a sudden, like, she had a lot of boyfriends. And I'm like,
well, that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, she can't go anywhere without, you know.
Yeah, without everyone knowing. And, you know, but like, she's a smart woman. She knew exactly when to do it, when it was right. She's a lover, but she's also very intelligent. And I'm just blessed to have been around her, know her.
You have said something, and you and I are going to disagree about this.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. You want people to choose happiness.
Yes, I do. And you disagree with that?
Let me tell you why I disagree with it.
I'd love to hear it.
When I was 30 years old, I'm with my father, and my father says, "What's the matter? Something's wrong." I said, "I'm not happy." And my father said, "I'm 30. He said, "The Declaration of Independence gave you a right to pursue happiness. It did not give you a right to be happy." That's different than the way you look on happiness. You believe you can be happy by being happy.
By choice, yeah.
By choice. I believe you gotta work on it. I believe you gotta pursue it.
I don't think that we're that far off. Because my saying choose and your saying pursue are the same thing. Because anything that you pursue, you first have to make a choice that you want to pursue it.
Right.
And so I think what we're doing is congruently saying, you said at 30 you were upset, you weren't happy, and I'm saying choose happiness, and then your father said now work on it. And I think those two things are like important aspects of like what
people don't do. So it doesn't automatically come.
No, it doesn't automatically come, but you have to make the decision that you deserve it. And I don't think a lot of people, especially in this day and age where they're on social media and social media is telling them that they're not enough, where they're in relationships either intimate or with family and the family or people are telling them that they don't deserve things. And then they start to believe these things. And instead of believing that they deserve to be happy, they start to believe that this is all it is, that this is all I'll ever get. And I'm saying, don't believe that. Choose the happiness. Choose yourself.
How can you choose happiness, for instance, if you're wanting for so much just to be able to live a decent life every day? Why? How do you choose that?
Well, I think the reframing in that is that even when we're in moments, and I grew up super poor, I talk about this all the time, we didn't have, you know, like we were on food stamps, we didn't have the things that a lot of people would grow up in middle class have. I mean, we would move out of apartments in the middle of the night. Like that was something normal, like because you couldn't let the landlord see you leaving in the day. So in the middle of the night, we're packing up boxes. We're moving out to get into a hotel. But in those moments, I would also be thinking, wow, I have my mother who loves me. I have this one toy that it was this baby blue kangaroo that I would bring around everywhere. And if that was with me, I was happy because he would be bouncing around and playing.
So
and
you're looking for the little things.
Look for the little things. The reframe is that even when life is its hardest, there are things around you that you can appreciate that can tell you that tomorrow will be better. Whether it's the sun shining on you, whether it's a smile from someone, whether it's just one text, whether it's this a cup of water that you have that says, you know, at least for this moment, I'm not thirsty. It's about appreciating the small things. And that was something that I learned not having in life is that as long as I focus on the small things, more will come because then I start to realize, oh, that's one small thing. That's one small thing. That's one small thing. There was this Instagram post that I saw when someone says, if you get 100 likes, it doesn't feel like a lot. But have you ever seen 100 people in a room? Have you ever gotten 1,000 likes? Have you ever seen 1,000 people in the room? So when you start to focus, you start to realize how big it is.
It's like, I'm so crazy. So when I go on social media, you know, Instagram or whatever, I don't look at the views. I look at the likes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How many people have punched like?
But liked it, yeah. I agree with you. You know what I mean? You're a smart man for that. So
it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing what ego is all about.
But I will tell you this. I am going to add from now on, mark my word, when someone says you choose happiness, and I'm going to say, yes, choose happiness. But as Maury said, then go pursue it. Right. I will say that for the rest of my life now.
Very so nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So what was it like in 2007 to find out you're a father?
Ooh.
And you had no idea?
It was wild. I wanted you to call me.
I mean, because, hey, baby, I was in my heyday.
Exactly. I wanted you to call me and say, hey, can you go on? That would have been the best if I would have been on your show and then later on had a talk show. But,
tell me the circumstances.
I had my best friend. She and I spent our childhood together, and she knew I was gay, but we decided that she wanted to lose her virginity to me, and even though I was gay, it made sense. And this is in the 90s, and so she moved away. There was no cell phone or social media to go, and I went about my life, and she went about her life. And then years later, when my son was 9,
I got this stack of papers of back child support for this child that I didn't know existed. And the beautiful part of what happened is that when I met her, I asked her why, and she said, I wanted one of us to have a good life. I wanted one of us to be able to make it. And it was an unselfish attempt. She and I actually have a series that we do called Co-Parenting Unlocked, where she and I talk about how we co-parent, we give advice to people. And what I appreciate about that is that we could have this moment where most people would say, you gotta hate her, y'all can't get along. But we took it and said, you know what? Yes, I missed 9 years, and I hated that I missed those years. But my son is now 28, and I got full custody of him when he was 10.
But not only that, you adopted his brother as well.
Adopted his brother as well.
Who you know, you're not related to biologically.
Yeah. You know, because he was going through some things in the family, and they were, you know, there was sexual abuse, and so it was easier for him to come and live with me, and it was supposed to be temporary. And it then turned into full-time custody of me having him. And it was the biggest blessing of my life because as a 15-year-old gay boy, I was like, oh, family is not an option for me. You know, that was something that I just figured it would never happen. And I always wanted to be a father, and I always knew that that was an important aspect because I knew that I had love to give, knowledge to give. And, you know, I believe the universe is going to give you what you want and it's going to find a way, and it did.
So what was it like when you tell them of your sexuality?
Well, first, my oldest son, I was on The Real World, like you said earlier, and he watched me because his aunt one day was watching and was like, you know, that's your father. And that's how he found out about me. So he knew about me prior to me knowing about him.
And he knew you were gay. You came out as gay.
Exactly. I was in the shower with a guy.
Reality, black, gay TV guy.
Yeah.
You were the first.
First.
Did it bother you? Did you think about it?
At the time, I was going on The Real World to get drunk. It was like, you know, that was the beginning of reality shows where they like, you went to a house and there was liquor everywhere. And they were like, you know, there was true conflict because they were bringing in people of different aspects. Right. But like, it was just in there to like, have a good time. I wasn't thinking about, you know, being the first of anything. But what I realized later is that the impact, and now looking back and I see all these little gay black boys who are reality stars, and I'm like, yeah, I remember when none of y'all wanted to be on camera. And I remember when none of them wanted to see us on camera. And now I feel a little bit of pride that like I ushered in a new era of people knowing our stories.
And a lot of people followed you.
Yeah, they did.
I mean.
Yeah, a lot, you know?
Now it's no problem.
No problem at all now, you know what I mean? And to be real, this is 2004, it was issues. When I would try to walk into a bar or something, people would scatter, people would isolate, people would try to define my story. They would tell me that I used to get called a homo thug. I don't even know what a homo thug is. I'm not even a thug. I like gold necklaces with like, I was like, who's calling me a thug? Like, but like that was a reference because no one had ever seen a gay black man before, so their expression was that, okay, well then he has to be a thug. He has to be these, you know, Oprah made, you know, the term DL big back then. And so because of that, everyone looked at every gay black man as on the DL or they're hyper this. And I was like, no, I'm just a 23-year-old kid who just graduated from college. I'm not any of those things. And I'm just glad now that people get to see the fullness of my community.
So, when I'm doing the show, when I did the show, there are two things I really did not want to get involved with.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do religion on the show.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do politics. You, in the last election, you did a lot of politics.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. Well, so I don't have the option not to. And I'll say that. And I mean that in the sense of—
Why? Because the issues are too important?
They hit too close to home. You know, like, my parents are not from this country, you know, so I'm first generation American. And I know what it was like for my parents trying
Where
to get jobs.
Where are they from?
Jamaica and Cuba. And I know what it's like for them to work 2-3 jobs. Like I said, we grew up poor because they were fighting every day to work and tried, like, never been arrested in their lives.
Did they come here legally?
They came here on green cards. Yeah, they came here on green cards. My father came through a scholarship with school, and then brought my mother. But the thing is that when I see conversations about immigration, I was a child that was being affected by that. And so when I, you know, like on my daytime talk show, I'm always like, I'm most worried about kids. Because as adults, we can argue, we can have all these conversations, but we keep forgetting that this affects some little child who just came into this world and is like, why are y'all doing this? And so when you're talking about these people and like, you know, dividing us, that hurts the children who are just trying to wake up and go to school and be happy. Yeah. And then also we're talking about the rights of African Americans and, you know, police brutality. As a black man who's raising two black boys, those things hit home. And I have to make sure that we're making sure that the people in charge are seeing us all equal. And then as a gay man, you know, and so like I never have the option to stay quiet because I'm like, if I stay quiet, then the communities that I love and cherish the most will be deeply impacted. And I don't believe that God gave me this microphone just to sit quiet, you know? Even though our job is to listen,
yeah.
In those arenas, I gotta talk.
Well, it's interesting when you think about that because I can't imagine during my years, I'm sure I had illegal immigrants on the show.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they came to this country, they worked hard, they grew a family.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they were, whether it was a DNA test or a lot, how do I know what they are?
Yeah.
You know what the problem is? Now people are trying to tell you what you are.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, if you live a life where you're not a criminal, you're not this, you're not that, And all of a sudden, you might be, you know, hauled out and sent away because you didn't come here the right way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit terrifying.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, because I know so many people who respect you and look up to you, and see themselves in you, who might not have the courage to say that.
Well, you know. I think even supporters of the administration, I don't think they want to see hardworking, well-mannered people thrown out of this country. I don't think so. I mean, even guys like Joe Rogan are getting upset and pissed off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean.
But, you know, the thing is that it takes more conversations to say, unfortunately, it's all blending together. And so though you don't want to see hardworking, that definition becomes a slippery slope. And then someone says, well, that person is not. And then all of a sudden now, everyone's lumped together. And I think what we need to be doing in this country is pursuing that equality and happiness for all.
You know, it's very interesting about being lumped together.
Yeah.
People want to lump Taylor Swift and Beyonce together. How about that?
See, this is why he's the master. When you can go from politics to Beyonce and Taylor Swift, that was a smooth. This is a masterclass. I need y'all to understand. Did y'all see that masterclass?
I just jumped off of what you were talking
that
about.
That is Barbara Walters level, Maury Povich level. That is a masterclass. Let me see. This is what I'm talking about. Like, listen.
I'm learning. You get upset when people try to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, why compare these two amazing women? Like, don't do it. Like, don't do it. They have two different styles, you know what I mean? Like, two different styles. They're both great. They're both great. And let people be in their greatness. You know, people always feel like they got to put something in a box. Like, this fits, that's that, this is this, that's that. It's like, why can't that just be? That is this, and that is that. And that's okay that they're different.
You know, their level of greatness can be the same.
Exactly. Level of greatness can be the same. But they're two different people and have two different genres.
Do you know her?
Beyonce?
Yeah.
So Beyonce and I used to hang out on the playground when we were 3 years old. She doesn't remember this. But I remember that, you know, she's my best friend. And I'm waiting for her to see me one day and say, oh, that was you.
Oh, really?
That was you from the playground.
Oh, really?
I don't know her, but I wish I knew her.
Did you really? I mean, are you fooling me?
No, I'm fooling you. So we grew up, we were born the same year, and I'm a year older,
but you're from New Orleans too?
I'm from Houston. Yeah, she's from Houston. Okay. Yeah. And so we grew up in the same area. So I'm like, at some point we had to be on a playground together. At some point we had to be at a playground, and she has to recognize me and say, you're the kid from the playground. So I did meet one of her artists, Chloe and Haley, and they did tell me that she has watched my daytime talk show. So I do think she's, you know, I don't know. I can't confirm, but I do know she's in at least one episode.
Exactly.
She's seen me unlock a phone or two.
Isn't it great when you know that some big star has watched your show?
Yes. Who's the biggest star that you were surprised by that watched your show?
What really threw me was all of the rap artists who used me in their lyrics.
Oh, yes.
So that was, I mean, but Cardi B and all, Nicki Minaj, and they were, I get the feeling, they were also in the middle of their big fight. One of them wanted to come on and take a lie detector test I know Legend was great. I mean, and his wife watches my show. In fact, when she had a baby, we sent her a onesie.
Oh, that's amazing.
You are the father onesie.
The father, that's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I always kind of liked that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? People like that. I mean, it was great. You know, I was I'm a dear acquaintance of George W. Bush. And when he was president, he used to have me and a friend of mine down to lunch all the time. And he says one time, you know, Poe, he had a nickname for
everybody. He calls
you Poe? Yeah, Poe.
That's amazing.
So Poe, I can't run anymore because my knees are bad. I'm on the treadmill and I'm flipping around. How do you do that show with a straight face? I said, well, think of all the things you have to do every day with a straight face.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, when you get, you know, athletes.
Yeah.
Athletes just loved watching the show. They always used to say, football players used to say, the show would be on in the locker room and the coaches are up there waiting for them to get in the practice, and now it's late and they won't leave until they find out who the father
is. So you're the reason the Cowboys suck. It's your fault. They're in the locker room watching more. No, I'm messing with you. That's amazing. So that's what I've always told myself, is that if I can make it in a song like Maury, then I know I've made it.
Oh,
when someone says in a song, I'm going to unlock your phone, like Karamo, that I made it.
Right.
I made it.
Did you start out as a social worker?
Yeah, I did. It was the best job ever.
The best?
Yeah.
I would have thought it would be so not intimidating, and at the same time, geez, can I really make anybody better because of this?
Well, it was a catalyst of why I... It was a catalyst of how I run my show now, and like the reason why resources and families and making sure that they're together was so important to me, because I saw the impact of like what it would do if you just had one moment to give a child some love, some support, if you had one moment to get a parent to understand their actions that helped heal their relationship. You know, it was a blessing to be in that job, and I'm so thankful. You know, and social workers do so much, and shout out to every social worker out there, because y'all are the best in the world. Yeah.
It didn't depress you.
Didn't depress me. But you know, same people ask me sometimes about our shows. Like, you have all these high emotions, and you see people sometimes at their worst. Does it depress you? And it's like, no, you know, because we're human beings, you know?
Well, you know,
was there ever a moment that depressed you?
I always thought that our, one of the great salvations of the show was that people could unburden themselves.
Exactly.
And that they found the show as a safe place.
Exactly.
And so therefore, you know, I was giving a service to them.
Yeah.
But I used to get a lot of crap from media critics who would say, you're exploiting these people. You ever had that accusation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Season one, it came out. I haven't had it since, which is great. Haven't had it since. But, you know, the same thing, what I say to people is like, why can't people have their real emotions? You know, like, I always think to myself, like, why do we need to put people's emotions in a box? Just because someone is excited and they move around, in your family they don't, but here they do. And it's okay for them to have whatever emotion is real for them. And also, they're choosing to be here. We are not we're not putting a gun to people's heads on the street of New York and saying, hey, get on our shows. They're saying, this is a space where I want to solve this issue. And I want this person to be the guide of me solving that issue. And so I'm excited about it, you know. And people have to stop judging how other people decide to live their lives. If someone wants to be on our shows, that is their choice, and they're getting help.
Do you know who
I'd like to know that? Sorry to interrupt you. The person I'd like to know that is this Emmy committee who doesn't like to look at conflict shows the same way they look at entertainment shows.
Forget them.
It's crazy. The amount of work we put in, it's easy to interview a celebrity.
I had one nomination in 31 years. One.
Isn't that wild? Wild. With the work that it takes for your crew, for the staff, for you to be able to have people be their authentic self and have a show.
But you were pretty open about talking about your own mistakes in life.
Yeah, always.
Why?
Because the same way that we talk about like those Goody Two Shock shows where, you know, those people have had the same issues I've had. And
well, I'll tell you, Oprah, her whole success to me was because of showing her vulnerabilities on air.
Agreed, 100%.
Her past. Her life. What she's going through.
Exactly. And that's what I always want people to know is like, I'm gonna give it all. I'm gonna tell you that I'm not perfect. Like we did an episode season two where my son came on and talked about his addiction and how I found him overdosing. And that was a hard moment for me as a dad. Like, you know, like I felt like a failure. I felt like, what did I not do right? Like, you know, he's sober and fine now and doing great. But that was a hard moment for us during the pandemic where he was using because he was lost. And I talk about that because I'm like, you know how many people, opioids, drug addiction is rampant in our country, yet we want to pretend like it's not happening in our own families? No, I'm going to tell you it happened to me. And just because I have this platform doesn't mean that I'm any better. And I want people to know, like, I got through it, you can too.
So my last question before the 19th hole is, the name of the podcast is On Par.
Yeah.
When do you feel on par?
When do I feel on par? I feel most aligned when I'm loving myself.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
I feel most on par.
So you don't want to love yourself too much, but because then you get a big ego, right?
Yeah. I think there's a level, but I always make sure that I always am checking in with myself. Like the things that you practice saying to yourself in the mirror, I'm big on that. I wake up in the morning and I don't go into like saying, oh, this doesn't look good. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, this is whatever. I look in the mirror every morning while I'm brushing my teeth and I'm like, you know what? You have done it. You have made past the odds. Like, keep going. You're a great guy. Keep being kind. And I feel aligned and it helps me to walk in the world to be able to help other people and to show other people love.
Okay, so we're at the 19th hole.
Yeah.
It's part of the show where, I turn it over to you.
Yeah.
You can ask me anything you want. I might answer truthfully or I might screw around.
By the way, I suck at this. I don't know how to golf.
What, you want to try right now?
I will.
You try and then you'll ask me a question.
Okay, this is gonna suck.
Don't worry about it.
Oh! Maybe I don't suck. Okay.
Very good.
If you were a talk show host, what job would you have wanted?
Well, as a kid, you know, we all want to be athletes, right?
Yeah.
And I worked for a broadcaster who did the baseball games for the Washington Senators. And I thought I was pretty good at baseball, and I wanted to be a baseball player.
Oh, nice.
So I would, in spring training, I would catch the infield ground balls that people were, you know, they were working out. And so therefore they would let me hit in the batting cage. And the first, I'll never forget it, Camilo Pascual, one of the great pitchers back in the day of the late 50s and early 60s. And I thought, I mean, I was a good high school player, and he threw me a curveball. And it started over here, and I guarantee you it was going to hit my head. And my foot was in the dugout, and it comes right over the plate. And that's when I knew I'll never make it.
That was it. Thank God for that. We needed you as a talk show host.
Exactly, yeah. What else? Anything else?
Is it yours or then me?
No, I'll do it.
I'll do you, and then...
All right, we'll see. I don't know if I can do the same thing you did. I mean, that's pretty damn good.
That was beginner's luck.
Huh?
Beginner's luck for me.
Oh! I had it and I didn't. No, I just didn't hit it hard enough. Okay.
So while you're hitting it, I asked you then.
Yeah.
So we both had some wild guests on our shows that have had some complicated relationships and have done some crazy things sexually. What is the craziest thing Mari Povich has ever done?
Sexually?
Intimately. You said I could ask you anything. Lee said, I want to see if you're going to go there.
Oh, my God. Sexually?
Was Mari Povich a player back in the day before Connie?
Yeah, I mean, here's the difference.
Okay? Yeah.
Connie was, we never dated exclusively.
Oh.
She was working in L.A. I was working in, we've never lived together until we were married. And so she would go out with these Hollywood types.
Uh-huh. You were a Hollywood type.
No, but I'm not. I was never a Hollywood
type. Got it, got it. I get what you meant.
She went out with stars.
Yeah.
And so she always said to me, you go out with people whose names you can't even remember. that's okay.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, I was always, back in the day when I was single, it was back when, you know, you went to bars. That was the only thing you did.
And
because it was before, you know, social media. It was before dating sites, any of that stuff. And you met at bars.
Yeah.
And I was always attracted to the bartender.
Really?
Yeah. And the problem was, you'd have to wait till
2 o'clock in the morning, yes.
Before you ever had a chance.
Yeah.
So that was it.
I have a friend that does the same thing. What is that
still?
About? Still, to this day, he goes to the bar and he only, instead of all the girls that's around, he only pinpoints the bartender, sits, talks, is patient. It's that long game.
And by the way, it's you get to know a person pretty quickly.
Yeah.
She's the bartender.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, I'm just happy I know that Maury was a player back in the day. No, we didn't know that Maury was a player before Connie, y'all. Maury was a player.
No, I know I'm not that much of a player. Come on, man.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Go ahead. Hit the last one.
All right. All right. Last one. Since I went a little while on last one.
Yeah.
Is you've had a long relationship, and a lot of us want that.
Yeah.
If there is one thing you could tell me not to do and then to do, what would those things be?
Oh, okay. This is what I believed. Okay?
Yeah.
See, I still believe it. Connie gives me a bunch of crap about it. If you have an argument, if you have a discussion, the minute your head hits the pillow, it's over. And the next day, you start anew.
Agreed.
That's most important. And that's what you want to avoid. And Connie always says, yeah, but I hold a grudge. stuff like that. But so that's what you don't want to do. I think more than anything else, what really cuts through any problems, sense of humor.
Oh, that's nice. Laugh.
Yeah, sense of humor.
Laugh it up.
And make sure your mate has a sense of humor.
Good.
You don't want to be around people who are dour all the time, you know, and just don't smile. And just, I want a face that you can look at with a smile.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Don't you think?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Be happy together.
I passed the Karamo test.
Well, actually, I'm going to break the rule, and I'm going to ask you one more.
Yeah.
Can I unlock your phone?
Can you what?
Can I lock your phone?
Lock it?
Unlock it.
You want to unlock my phone? Sure.
Hey, I'm getting to unlock Maury's phone.
There's nothing on my phone.
You never know. We just found out you were a player back in the day. I don't know what might be on there.
I wasn't much of a player.
This is funny because Maury's phone is not even on. That's
nice. No, but I mean, by the way, is your phone on all the time?
No. We're too busy.
Are you addicted to any social media?
The Karamo's on social media. I'm obsessed with looking at it.
Really?
Yes, obsessed.
Do you look at the comments?
I don't look at the comments. No, I don't look at the comments. I don't look at the comments. It's 11:11.
Okay.
And Maury is letting
me. That's my son.
He's letting me unlock his phone. I have it in my hand. We're going to the photos first.
Oh, a lot of photos.
It's all good stuff. It's all golf and good things, y'all. It's all him and Connie
dogs,
and family.
Dogs,
family.
Dogs, a lot of dogs. A lot of my kids, my girls and my son, all stuff.
Look,
do you ever douse your library in terms of photos?
No.
Do you keep everything always?
I keep everything always. I keep everything
so do
always.
I.
Yeah.
Wonder, you think that's taken a lot of
storage?
Juice?
Yeah, it does. It takes all of it. But you know what? It's what keeps us honest. The fact that we can see anybody can unlock my phone. I don't have any problem. I leave my phone around because I'm like, you're not going to find anything in it.
No, there's nothing in my phone.
I think the fact that people
there's
hide.
There's no porno in my phone. It's not that.
I didn't think I was going to find porno.
No. Come on. I mean, I'm 86 years old.
Exactly. Hold on. We've had some people on our shows. And
really?
We had an episode last week on premiere week with a 71-year-old. And the things we found in his phone?
Really?
Jesus Christ.
I want to thank you, my friend, for being on. It's so, so good to see you.
Great to see you.
Everybody listening, do not miss the new season of Karamo Show, premiering September 22nd. So make sure you tune in. And as always, subscribe to On Par with Maury Povich on YouTube and everywhere you get your podcasts. Make sure you stay curious, everybody. Until next time. If you've had as much fun as I did, make sure you subscribe to On Par with Maury Povich on YouTube and tap that little bell so you don't miss a thing. And if you like to listen on the go, we're on Apple, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcasts. Hit that follow button. I'll be back with more before you know it. On Par with Me, Maury Povich, is brought to you by Mopo Productions, A Better Life Media, and Radley Studios, with executive producers, me, Maury Povich, Holly J. Mirabella, and Christian Thompson, supervising producer Mike Bournazian, and directed by Mark Leibowitz.